Good afternoon and welcome to The City View, the afternoon podcast from City AM with all the news and views from the Square Mile today. I'm editor of City AM, Andy Sylvester. The fallout from energy provider Bulb's collapse has continued today, with the boss of Scottish Power warning that the recent spate of firm failures will filter through to higher bills. Bulb went bust yesterday, but continues to operate under, quote, special administration, unquote, with the bill effectively landing on the taxpayer for now. But Scottish Power chief exec Keith Anderson said today that the combination of wholesale gas price hikes and the cost of transferring customers from failed firms onto the books of new ones would hike bills for customers not once, not twice, but perhaps even three times over the next year or so. Bad news for those concerned about the cost of living hikes. New, closely watched data from IHS Market, however, suggests the UK recovery is still moving forward, albeit at some way below the go-go rates of the summer. The latest survey suggests output has continued to tick up, with a 57.7 reading for October across services and manufacturing, with a reading of 50, of course, implying no change at all. The Wonks, however, did warn that almost two-thirds of private sector businesses are feeling the pressure of higher input costs. Atom Bank, one of the more successful of the challenger neobanks, continues to do things differently. The firm is moving to a four-day week with no cuts in pay, citing higher productivity and a better work-life balance. And finally, AO World has warned Xbox and PlayStation games might not be available ahead of Christmas due to a global shortage of semiconductor chips. 12-year-olds could be in line for an unexpected lesson in supply squeezes come Christmas Day. But joining me now is Leah Montebello, CTM's TMT reporter. Leah, thanks for coming in. Big news in the delivery wars today.
Yeah, so today Getir announced that they were acquiring Wheezy. So if you don't know who they are, they're quick commerce companies. So the idea is that you can go on your phone, order some eggs. 5 minutes later, someone will be there delivering eggs to you. So this is relatively big news. It's a trend of consolidation, which is seen in this kind of startup space. Lots of VC money has been pumped into this kind of quick commerce. So the move is basically showing that Getir are confident that they can have a UK presence, which is good for the industry.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as you say, we do see this consolidation now because there are this raft of players. I mean, you only have to pull up at traffic lights in London at about 5:30, or actually about 10:30 on Saturday morning. They're probably getting their sort of hungover orange juice and bacon in. And there's this whole phalanx of scooters and motorbikes and bikes with different brands. And it does strike me that probably was not going to last very long. But that consolidation is also necessary because as of yet, these companies still have yet to crack the big question, which is how to make money out of this. Amazon are obviously getting involved as well via their partnership with Deliveroo. So it's going to be a competitive space for some time, you'd imagine.
Yeah, so it's estimated, I was reading a report this morning, it's worth about £1.4 billion pounds at the moment, estimated to be about £3 billion in a couple of years' time. So it's clearly an area that's growing and definitely grew during the pandemic.
Definitely one to watch, Leah, as you say. If you told us a decade ago about a small mini cub company with a quite cool app, I guess we wouldn't have expected it to turn into Uber. So we will see what becomes of Getir. Thanks for joining us. That was Leah Montebello. We'll now be joined by Chris Harms, who is the managing director at BVNK, who are one of the first, if not the first, companies trying to crack traditional finance and crypto and bring them together into one happy space. Chris was in the investment analyst world for a long time before moving across to what he describes as the rabbit hole of crypto with CoinDirect, and now leads BVNK. Chris, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hi, Andy. Great to be here.
Why don't you kick off with a sort of, I guess, explanation of why you guys think you are different from, you know, anything else that's on the market at the moment when it comes to digital assets? And what is it that you, I guess, offer to audiences, companies that haven't necessarily gone into this space before?
Sure. We launched BVNK about 2 months ago, and it was really to bring fiat, so traditional currencies, and kind of a business banking experience and crypto together in a single account, and really servicing innovative, fast growth businesses that are looking to take advantage of the innovations and some of the new technology stacks that are, you know, that cryptocurrency and digital assets are enabling, but also give that sort of experience to clients that don't need to get involved with the technical complexity and that sort of thing, and really just a simple, efficient, give them that same UX and user experience that they were used to from their traditional kind of business banking platform. just powered by digital assets.
Yeah, that's interesting. You talked about the terminology and technology, because you know, whether anyone is a digital asset crypto skeptic or whether they're a full-on cheerleader, I don't think there's any question that the terminology does scare off rookies, novices, etc. Are you trying to strip that out and just present something that looks like a traditional banking experience?
I think we're trying to take it one level above that, because I think a lot of, you know, what neobanks did to the old banking experience, we're trying to take that similar sort of experience, UI and UX, but then really let the rails, the crypto rails, power the functionality of that account. And what that really means is, you know, there you've got instant settlement, you have cheaper, faster kind of cross-border payments. You are able to leverage or access different opportunities within the crypto capital markets that allow yield and, you know, getting to align clients to get exposure to crypto, but all in a non, I guess, complicated way. And, you know, having to think about all these catchphrases and terms like DeFi and blockchains and what does all of this actually mean? Really, it's just presenting it to them, you know, to them in to clients in a way that they can experience what they're used to, but just with a much better technology stack underneath.
Yeah, for sure, that makes sense. And you mentioned, you know, what does it all mean? I guess if you are, you know, why do your clients want to come to you? What is the win from being engaged in digital assets at the moment, beyond just, you know, we all know about the growth in various cryptocurrencies, yeah, but more broadly, why are they coming towards digital assets now?
I think there is naturally, you've seen with obviously the price rise in digital assets over the last 18 months brings a lot more interest, a lot more media interest, yeah, and a lot more people into the space. But with that comes a lot more innovators, developers, and just general kind of, you know, brain power into the space to kind of build new innovative businesses and business models. And what we're really finding is clients are looking for, if you look at some of our, you know, one of our core products, the BVNK yield product, is really giving clients an access to alternative sources of yield. You know, if we're sitting, you know, you can get less than 1% on most savings accounts, probably less than 0.5% on most savings accounts. So in this yield starved world and environment that we find ourselves in, the crypto capital markets are, you know, allowing clients access to crypto capital markets to earn yields between 6 and 8% on dollar linked stable coins, which you can just think of as, you know, cryptocurrency dollars on the blockchain, is really attractive in that sense. But there's also this movement to really looking at, given where inflation is going, especially some of the prints we've seen more recently, you know, there was that big kind of humdrum of putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet as an inflation hedge. So there are innovative treasurers, innovative companies that are looking at this and going, look, I'm actually devaluing now, given where interest rates are and where inflation is, my real return on cash held in a bank account doesn't really make much sense. Let me explore some alternatives. So they're moving out into more kind of newer technologies. And I think the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency industry provides that in droves in terms of innovation and kind of access to new financial services and products.
Yeah, I mean, you were one of it, as you mentioned, one of those companies that sort of, I guess, for want of a better phrase, looking to professionalize the space, looking to make it look a little bit more like something that those of us who've been in finance for a very long time understand as finance, you know, it has the same kind of terminology around it. One of the questions, obviously, about digital assets and the future thereof is around regulation, is around the state of the market, and, you know, if there is a crash, if there is a fall, how are consumers protected, etc. Do you think it's companies like, you know, companies like yours are a part of that process of turning this from something, you know, exciting, different, and a bit wild westy at times into something that becomes a little easier for maybe CEOs, CFOs to sell to their boards?
100%. I think we've already started some of those conversations on a global stage, I guess, you know, with just with people in the industry in general. We really see cryptocurrency and traditional financial services operating in parallel at the moment. But without a doubt, it's our belief that these are going to converge. Mm-hmm. And by bringing those together and being an advocate to bring those together and, you know, bringing transparent solutions to the space, we really believe that, you know, we're going to accelerate that transition as you're talking about, those conversations, having those conversations at the right levels. And I also think, I mean, it's a good thing to point out is, you know, the new generation, you know, Gen Zers and these, you know, these are digitally native generations that are going to be the corporate treasurers of the future, are going to be the entrepreneurs of the future, are going to be running the companies. You know, cryptocurrency is going to be digital, you know, just going to make sense to them. And I think by starting these conversations early and building a business and building solutions for this target audience, you know, is what we're really looking to do and really focus on showing people that these two don't need to coexist in two parallel universes, but should actually converge and get the best of both worlds. So the regulatory and consumer protections that you get from traditional financial services, but the innovation and the technology stacks that you get from crypto. And when those two converge, I think you get powerful, you know, powerful benefits, not just from cost, speed, you know, new products, but user experience, UX, UI, all of these.
Mm. The best of both worlds is certainly a compelling prospect, even for people like me, who I think can probably still just about be put in the skeptical camp for now. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Great, Andy. It's been a pleasure to chat to you today.
Thanks. And that's all from us at the City View podcast today. Do join us again tomorrow for all the news, views, and analysis out the square mile. And do, of course, remember to pick up your copy of City AM in the morning too. Thanks. See you soon.